I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Not really, though, because Chelsea have a bit of a stinker at the weekend. We're going to get into that. Real Madrid also held. Carlo Ancelotti not happy. Union Berlin still top of the table in Germany. In the most dramatic circumstances. How does that happen? Liverpool, again, more difficult. We're going to get into all that, but I feel that you've been wanting to talk about my man. Yeah. Roberto De Zerbi in Brighton for a while. And this was weird. Graham Potter going back to the Amex.
Yeah.
He actually got booed by a portion of the crowd at one point, which I think could have
And
hurt
booed
a
loudly
bit.
As well.
We'll get into that. But let's talk about Chelsea because this was a spit show, as the kids say. Yeah?
Completely, yeah. And the narrative before was very much Potter is still unbeaten since he joined the club in 9 games in all competitions.
Yeah, so that narrative, and I mentioned this on Thursday as well, because, you know, like the club tweeted out, like www.
Yeah, all the dubs.
Yeah, you haven't played anybody in that period other than Milan and Manchester United.
Yeah.
And you destroyed Milan and you drew with Manchester United.
Yeah,
right?
With 11 men against 10 for most of it against Milan in the second game. But yeah. But there was that. There was the Trevor Chalobah start, which is an incredible start. Every time he started in 29 games, he never lost. The fact that Potter was going back to Brighton, this is a team that he knows by heart. This is his team. He built it. Basically, Chelsea fans think, like, we can't lose this game. It's not possible. And then they get a shocker. I think the team selection was wrong. When we said it a bit on Thursday, but I don't want to see Christian Pulisic and Raheem Sterling as wingbacks. I don't think it works, and I don't think he suits them, and I think he's counterproductive.
It was only the second game that we've seen it, right?
Yeah.
They did it in midweek, and it was kind of...
Yeah, it was a bit meh. I just don't... I know you can maybe more experiment when you are a club like Brighton, maybe, than Chelsea, and maybe he doesn't really realise it yet. But I saw that lineup and I was like, I don't like this. I don't think this is a good team. And I think there's potential there that you could be spanked. I still think that the way they started the game was completely wrong. And that's not just on Potter's. But the team selection for me was already the mistake.
We saw some defensive errors too.
Massively,
in that back three. Was that down to the wingbacks or is it down to individuals?
Well, the thing with the wingbacks that I don't understand, I know what they can bring you going forward, of course, Sterling and Pulisic.
Right.
But your wingbacks are also, even if you don't look about the defensive side of the game, but your wingbacks are a key part of your build-up structure, right?
Yeah.
Because with the back five, they can help you so much, and there's patterns of play where your wingbacks help you to just
the dialogue
escape the
with
pressure
the central
from the other team.
Exactly,
yeah. All of that. But in that case, they can't do that. This is not what they do. They're not used to it. They don't know. They never played that position before, apart from the Salzburg game. So this is not, you know, this is not what they do. So I was like very surprised. And I think, again, completely counterproductive in a game like this, away at Brighton, when you know Brighton are going to press you high. And basically, you played into Brighton's hand, it felt.
Kepa's injury is obviously not why they lost, but that is another thing that happened. In fact, Mendy actually made a couple big saves.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
At the end, it generally feels like there's sort of an air of everything up in the air, right? There's an air of Potter comes in and he needs to kind of rebuild the team from the ground up, which is why when all those people said, oh, look, but oh no, they always wanted Potter. Potter's a natural evolution on Tuchel. He already has these great players and he's building on what. No, it. Yeah, Tuchel and Potter, they're more similar than Potter and Simeone. But the concepts are actually, many of the concepts, I think, are very, very different. And it's not just, but you know that line when, I think it was when they had a game here, when Potter Thomas Frank asked Potter, oh, why do you change your team so much? And he says, well, our concepts are all the same, but we need to find the right mix to apply them. I think that's the correct approach. I think that's genuinely how Potter views football. It's about concepts more than formation and personnel. But you still need to get the formation and the personnel, right?
Yeah, I agree.
He just hasn't had time to do that.
No, maybe not. But I'm still very skeptical about the Pulisic Sterling idea as them as wingbacks. I just don't know when he plans his game plan and plan the game and the structure and put his team on paper with his assistants and go like, okay, this is going to work great. I just don't. And Pulisic had a chance. He could have scored in the first half. But for Sterling especially, Pulisic played a little bit, if you remember, with Tuchel in that kind of position. For Sterling, for me, it's just a no-go straight away.
All right, let's talk about Brighton and De Zerbi, because obviously this was his first win. They had some good performances. I think the other game against Forest, where they absolutely mullered them but couldn't score.
Yeah.
Does this feel different than Potter?
It did. I think it did in a way, the way Estupiñán and Gross were played and used by De Zerbi. But I think the press is a bit more aggressive. There's that, obviously, boxing midfield, which he's done everywhere he's been, which works really well when you've got Caicedo in midfield, who I think is a wonderful player. So, yeah, I think he deserves a lot of credit for the way he played that game. You must have been happy for De Zerbi and, you know, his little celebrations and his big smile and everything.
Yeah, well, De Zerbi's reached this stage, I think, especially domestically in Italy, where it's weird. He's seen as, because he got so much good press for what he did in Sassuolo, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, people don't believe this because people think time never changes anywhere and people stay the same forever. But, you know, even when Sassuolo were kind of up and down and stuff, there was a sense he got a ton of praise from people like, oh, look, De Zerbi's so good. And then you had the backlash from people say like, well, why is he so good if Sassuolo are 10th or whatever in the table, right? And then, you know, he'd been linked with a couple bigger teams in Italy and then it didn't happen. And some people, there's a lot of De Zerbi loyalists out there who came out and said, well, you know, he missed out on these big jobs in Italy because people are still too conservative, they don't trust, and the Zerbi's team, like, learn. And so then people started making fun of them. People said, oh, look, you know, it's almost like the people came out and said, oh, well, the Zerbi never loses. He either wins or he learns, ha, ha, ha. Yeah, like, you know, stupid things like that, right?
Yeah.
And then obviously he goes to Shakhtar and, you know, achieves what he achieved there with the ups and downs and putting himself way out of his comfort zone. So I'm kind of happy that this stuff is working, not just in Italy. And I do think it's working. And I do think, as you know, that there is a reason most top teams in Europe play proactive football. It doesn't mean you have to pass it around, whichever way you're going to do it, whether you're going to press high, whether you're going to go through possession. But and he brings some really interesting things. I mean, the like you said, the box in midfield and whatever. It's different. I was happy. Those are big shoes to fill with Graham Potter because, remember, it's not just Graham Potter. It's the whole sort of, you know, he had his guy who went with him.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
also like, you know, Brighton lost Dan Ashworth, obviously, but this was before. But, you know, it's hard for
team. Yeah.
You know, the thing about Brighton is we've all praised them for their signings year after year and like, oh, look, they had value signings and whatever, but there's not a lot of money there. They don't pay a lot of money. They don't have a big wage bill.
No.
And when you have a more limited wage bill, you know, you can look for the value signings. If your value signing, you know, doesn't work out. I remember, do you remember Neeskens Cabano?
Yeah, of course. At Fulham, Paris-born and bred.
Okay, well, Paris-born and bred, great name.
Yeah.
But, you know, when this guy was like 19, people were thinking, oh, next big thing, value signing, like all these analytics
types. I saw him breaking through in Paris, and we thought...
And then, obviously, his career stalled, right? He did not become, you know, whatever. And now he's getting back on track or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Brighton, teams like Brighton, like Brentford, who operate in that sphere, are going to have a lot of signings like that where, the upside's there. He's promising, but maybe it just doesn't happen, you know? So I think he's winning people over with the way he plays and the way he operates. And I think, you know, in terms of individuals, I know Trossard somehow gets his goals all the time.
Yeah,
I think Caicedo was a great player.
Yeah.
I think defensively with some of the defenders he inherited, there is still a solid base. And, you know, but ultimately, you know, the talent level at Brighton is what it is. And it worked under Potter, and De Zerbi has to make it work for him.
Yeah. No, I was glad to see Mitoma started, for example, because I think he's got really great potential. Trossard, I'm a big fan, I have to say. And the fact that he keeps scoring against the big teams, even if you lose at City, but he's still there, he scores goals. The hat-trick, obviously, at Liverpool, but now everybody can score against Liverpool, so that doesn't mean as much. But I just think that now what I want to see from De Zerbi is I want those players to keep improving individually. I think Potter improved them, and I think we've said many times, you judge a manager by the trophies that he wins, of course, and I guess the style of football that he plays, but also how much he improved his players individually.
Yeah, and I would add, judge him relative to the resources that he has, right?
Yeah, completely.
It's not just about winning trophies. It is, what is your starting point?
Yeah.
I think he was helped, too, by the fact that Brighton, look, it's not like Brighton are the kind of club that are going to panic, but he already had a nice cushion because of how Potter started the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Asking about Potter, we touched upon this before. Those boos, he looked a little bit upset.
Yeah, completely. And he crossed after the game when we asked him the questions and like, what did you make of that? He said, well, I don't have to apologize. I don't have to say sorry for anything I did.
No.
You know, I took this team where it was and basically saying like, you know, I built this team and I felt like, you know, it was right for me to leave for Chelsea, the offer. I think he wanted, you can't begrudge him for wanting to go to Chelsea, even if it was in September or wherever it was. I don't think, I guess the fans booed him because they felt he let them down or he abandoned them or something, but that's not the way you should see it.
Well, there wasn't a compensation package in excess of £50 million, well. Like not quite Nagelsmann, but like,
not far from it.
You know, not far from it. He's been there. He's done his time. Yeah, I felt sorry for Potter.
I mean, if he'd gone to Crystal Palace, they wouldn't have booed him. They would have thrown coins at him.
That's a direct rival. Yeah, no, obviously.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's Chelsea. It's an upgrade for him.
All right. On to the work that Potter's doing. I made the point that it takes time, that he's different from Tuchel. I also think that this team is just poorly constructed in the summer. Poor use of resources. Yeah. And I've had this conversation with Chelsea fans on social media, like, oh, but what are you talking about? Cucurella is great. Manchester City wanted him. It doesn't make him a great player at that number.
Yeah.
Fofana, right? I remember the first season, when we were doing the show here, you're like, oh, Fofana, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Then the guy gets injured.
Okay.
He doesn't play for like a year and a bit. It doesn't mean you're going to go and, you know, the amount they paid for him is the amount that you would have paid for Fofana if he'd been playing great this whole time and fulfilled his potential. Then it would have been a fair price.
Yeah. They with all those for both of them. Yeah, for sure.
And, of course, he's injured again.
Yeah.
Right? Koulibaly with a year left on his contract. I mean, you're going to push the boat out and chuck that kind of money around. Sterling also with a year left on his contract, I might add. When you feel that you're one or two pieces away, right? Then I can go a little mad and say, this is going to put me over the top and win the title. I'm guessing that's how Tuchel felt about Chelsea when they were there. He says, I've won the Champions League. Now I need to close the gap on the top. So let me get these kind of signings. I don't care if we lose a lot of money because it'll come back because we're going to win something important.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not where Boehly was at.
No,
and I don't think that's where Boehly thinks he's at now, given he had to get rid of everybody and bring in a whole new bunch of technical directors and recruitment guys, right?
Which, by the way, most of them, I think, well, they might think exactly like you. I don't think this was a good summer transfer window. I think we need to correct it in January. And then what do? You're still left with all the signing that you made in the summer that now this new sort of tactical director team are not keen on. Maybe Potter are not keen on them either. You know, maybe he wants, I don't know, younger players than Koulibaly. I think Koulibaly was a great signing to make. And I still hope that he will show it. But maybe Potter thinks like, you know, I would rather a bunch of 25-year-old people who know already the Premier League than Koulibaly. I don't know. So they might, they go on in January and spend another 150 million to correct what they thought was wrong in the summer?
I don't think Potter necessarily works like that or things like that, because he's a company who's used to, you know, he doesn't get his pick at the movement. Supermarket, right? That said, this defense with Fofana and Koulibaly out, you know my thoughts on Cucurella.
Yeah. And Reece James out as well.
And Reece James out, if you're including the wing-backs. So I'm talking about sort of the tight back three, right? You made the point earlier off air that Thiago Silva is playing too much.
I think
and
so.
And it feels like he has started, I don't know the last time he got a break was, you know.
Yeah, I think he did before the United game in midweek. But I looked at him on Saturday and thought like, it doesn't look as sharp as he should look right now. And at his age, that I fear that he's overplayed him. But maybe you have to play him because you've got
Fofana
Koulibaly, maybe Reece James that you can use in the centre-back position.
You could have played Azpilicueta in the back three.
Yeah,
but then,
true.
I mean, and then Azpilicueta, Chalobah, Cucurella, back three.
Yeah.
Is that where we are now?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Exactly.
You surprised Chile's out?
I'm surprised
this takes us back to the wing backs.
And we go back to Sterling, Pulisic, nonsense for me. But again, maybe he will keep with Pulisic and Sterling and it will work out. Maybe he just did it to find the right formula like we've explained before. And he's seeing now that it's not the right formula. I just don't know why, unless there's something that we don't know about his fitness, Chilwell's fitness, or he did something wrong at training, or I don't know, he didn't put his tray back at the canteen. But it makes no sense for me that you don't play him more and that you don't play him in a game like that when you knew the opposition would be up for it, that you knew that you would be really at your best to beat this Brighton team. And I think, again, you picked your team wrong. And he came on after an hour, I think, for Cucurella, who was not good again. Let's not forget that this Cucurella that started was the one that he took off after 35 minutes the previous game. So again, what kind of message you send to your team if you still start the guy that you took off after half an hour the game before because he was dreadful?
I almost feel like this is one of those situations where, you know, if this is Pep Guardiola does it, he's like, oh, he's overthinking, right?
Yeah,
with Potter, we give him. I don't have a problem. And you know my thoughts on this. I don't have a problem with the manager overthinking.
No, me neither.
But it really does feel like he's going via trial and error to find what he wants. Not because he's a bad manager, but because he just doesn't have the time to go.
Maybe that's what he has to do.
And work on this. Now, that said, I know you love criticizing managers for when they make substitutions. I'm a bit surprised you're 3-1 down.
Yeah.
And you wait an hour to make your first. Well, obviously, he did keep up for Mendy at halftime. That surprised me. Same way it surprised me that he brought, you know, another striker on, Broja, with 10 minutes to go. Why not sooner?
Yeah,
why not mix things up a little?
Yeah, no, I don't know. He said that he felt the second half was better anyway, which I'm not sure. I would have changed a lot of things at halftime, to be fair. Not just the keeper that you had to change because Kepa was injured anyway. But I would have changed a lot of what we saw from the first half. That was, okay, you scored 2 own goals, but I thought there was a lot of negative in that first half. But to then bring on Aubameyang for Sterling after an hour and Chilwell for Cucurella after an hour and then wait until the 80th minute. So it's another 20 minutes to bring on Broja and I can't remember who the fourth substitute.
Ziyech,
that's it. I was really surprised, I have to say. Really, really surprised.
Were you a bit surprised too that in a game like this, so I'm guessing he feels, okay, in terms of central midfield, if I'm going to have Sterling and I'm going to have sort of my box, right, with Mount and Gallagher forward. We can debate Gallagher another day. Yeah. And Loftus-Cheek and, you know, 2 guys behind.
Yeah.
I can't have Jorginho be one of those 2 guys if I have the attacking wingbacks in Sterling and Pulisic. Loftus-Cheek is a big fella.
Yeah,
Kovacic, runs. You know, I don't really have a defensive specialist other than Dennis Zakaria, but this poor man I don't think will ever play.
I mean, come on.
You know, that's a whole other issue. At some point, though, when you're 3-1 down, why not get somebody who can pass? I'm not saying Kovacic and Loftus-Cheek can't pass.
No, but
Loftus-Cheek still, people complain that Jorginho seems slow and weak. I mean, Loftus-Cheek, when he's in that deeper position and he's spreading the ball around, he looks ponderous and predictable.
Yeah.
I mean, Loftus-Cheek is more effective, I think, driving.
Yeah.
Kovacic, we know, is more effective when he's driving.
Yeah, definitely.
It seemed odd that once you've tried that and it hasn't worked, and by the way, there's nobody in your back three who can really pass other than Thiago Silva, wouldn't that be a Jorginho situation?
Yeah,
so you're keeping him fresh for your relevant Champions League game, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I thought against the Brighton press, because we knew exactly, and the first goal comes on them recovering the ball super high and Chelsea making a mistake in the build-up play because they were never going to play long all game. I thought Jorginho would have been very, very useful in that. And to not pick him for this game and going for guys who, yeah, at times can be press-resistant, but not in the way that you need your central midfielder to be for this game, I thought was, again, maybe a mistake.
And you said, we know they're not going to go high, they're not going to go long. I go back to this. If you do play Pulisic and Sterling, and even people who don't like them will admit you, both these guys are very, very fast.
Yeah.
Why not mix it up with a longer pass, right? Especially when you have Kepa back there, who's good with his feet, right?
Yeah, no, completely.
And Thiago Silva. I mean, it's not a crime, right? We see the Ederson-Sterling connection, or, you know, back when he was at City. And that seemed kind of odd to me as well. It's almost as if maybe the players are so preoccupied with incorporating his concepts that maybe they make fewer decisions for themselves. I don't know what it is, but
no, I don't know.
It was a very would have been a very logical change of pace, no?
Yeah, I thought so, and I think they didn't use enough the width of the pitch to use both Pulisic and Sterling, and I just think that defensively they were always going to struggle, and Pulisic struggled more on his right-hand side, Brighton left-hand side, because Estupinan was always going to attack and it's got more pace than Gross, who played on the other side. So Sterling, I think, was a bit more okay. But I just don't understand, when you know you're going to play against this Brighton side with an Estupinan super attacking, or even Solly March on the other side, and then you still put Pulisic and Sterling as your wing backs, thinking, what, they're going to defend, really? They're not going to leave space in behind them?
I'm guessing maybe the thinking was that they're going to attack so well and they're going to play high up the pitch and, you know, effectively they're going to play on the same line as when you have the ball anyway.
Yeah,
they're
going to
play on the same line as Havertz, actually.
Oh, maybe Havertz, yeah.
That you're going to pin Estupinan and March back. The problem is you can pin Estupinan back, but then when you turn the ball over, Stupinan's just going to take off, and all it means
like
is he's got more meat, more ground to cover,
yeah,
which means he's just going to pick up pace. You know, that's the part which you struggle with. We've talked about, all right, I don't want to go down the bully route, but let's do a little bit, because we've talked about in the summer all the recruitment, scout people, everybody leaves. He knows he has to address it. He is addressing it. He's brought people in. He's still. This whole concept of multi-club ownership keeps coming up again. What do you think these guys are doing once they're in place? What are they going to do? What should they do? If you were addressing them, right? If you were their boss, if you were Todd,
yeah,
right? You'd be even shorter than you are in real life.
Yeah.
But if you were Todd, what would you say to them? Say, all right, guys, this is what we need to do in terms of recruitment, and this is what we need to do, and we should start thinking about multi-club ownership, maybe even moving, because I believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lawrence Stewart appointment, which is what he did at Monaco, is definitely with the mindset of going into multi-club ownership. And I think this is something that Burley really wants. So for me, Stewart for sure is going to look after that, plan it, prepare it, and then I think they will go for it as soon as possible. I don't know where you go first. If you're Chelsea right now, do you go to Portugal, a bit like PSG and Braga have done? Do you go to Belgium, like other clubs have? Do you go to Italy? Where do you go? If
you go to 12 different countries, like City Football Group?
Yeah, no, maybe, but you'd have to start somewhere.
Right.
So what is the best league or best, you know, sort of kind of club to start with?
Generally, the reason people go to Portugal and Belgium is very simple, is that it's the easiest place to bring in foreigners.
Yeah.
Just simply with work permits,
yeah,
non-EU
visas
players
and
stuff like that. Portugal is seen as a natural bridge, obviously, especially for Brazilians coming over because of the language. And I think Belgium is seen, rightly or wrongly, the type of football that's played there in the competition. It's still technical, but is often more seen as more physical than in other European countries, so perhaps closer to the Premier League. I mean, that's generally the thinking of it.
But like, for example, would you buy Vitesse Arnhem, who've been your kind of...
Do you need to buy them?
Yeah, I mean, you already own them kind of thing. But I think for me, Laurent Stewart, that's his job. For the others, what was interesting in the summer, and we talked, is all those youngsters that they brought from, you know, Carney to Casadei to all those guys. Do you continue like this? And I think amongst the guy like Joe Shields that they brought in, there's guys who are very good with the scouting network, with all the contacts, to keep down that route. But this is, if you're Chelsea Football Club, you know, this is it's not risky, it's not, but it's a big deal. You know, you're a huge club. You need superstars. And maybe the kids are good, but you also need superstars. And I think Joe Shields right now surely would be looking at continuing the path towards those young, super talented European players. So they might go more like that. But Vivel maybe will look at, okay, who can I sign as a big name to strengthen the first team and have an impact straight away? Because they and the others not ready to have a huge impact right now in the Champions League for Chelsea in the next 6 months, for example.
I think there's a great point. It was funny when you mentioned superstars there. I was thinking, like, who are Chelsea's three biggest superstars who are, let's say, under the age of 30 and are going to be part of your future, right? So not Thiago, Koulibaly, whatever, yeah. right? And you want to say Havertz, Mount, and Reece James? Is that the three that we come up with?
Yeah, probably I would think so.
I mean, as a top, those are your top three when you compare them with City's top three.
Sterling, Liverpool's maybe? Three. Sterling. You would go Sterling, Mount, and Reece James?
I struggle with Sterling. I don't know. Does Sterling belong in that company? Man, because I tell you what, Sterling has not been good since moving over. He's been given every chance, every position. Both managers always played him. He's not on that level. I know he scored a bunch of goals at the Euros. He was deemed expendable by Manchester City. Yeah, he could be there. But I guess what I'm saying is in terms of core kind of wow factor, superstar. And obviously, if Nkunku comes, maybe it becomes him. But it's an odd position kind of to be in. You feel like you have a lot of players who can become better, go to the next level, right?
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, those three guys that we mentioned, how many of them are definite starters at the World Cup? Even if Reece James were fully fit, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, right. I think Reece James would start.
But we don't know because he could be stuck with Kyle Walker again. Right? You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
None of these guys are like kind of like I am the leader of a big.
Yeah,
I mean, Havertz could start. He's a great player.
Will start.
Havertz, we're still kind of waiting to go to that level, right? Mount.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't know, right?
No, that's true. That's true. And just to finish on Chelsea, Gab, what did you make of Ekbali's comments? I think it was at the weekend or Wednesday at the
Sportico Invest Sports Conference. And I'll just read the quote and let it percolate. He's saying, these Premier League teams generally, in our view, are not well managed. He makes an exception for Liverpool and Manchester City. Again, not hard to say. They've done well with the first or second. And he says, European football is probably 20 years behind U.S. sports in terms of sophistication on the commercial side and sophistication on the data side. I had one super high-level sporting director at a top three world club tell me when I asked about their approach to data, they said, the data is my eyes. I pick players based on my eyes. He had six scouts and no data. That would be Luis Campos, by the way. I'm just guessing. Is he right? Does it feel? I mean, we live in London, obviously, but we're big fans of U.S. sports. We've been to sporting events in the U.S. Does it feel like we're 20 years behind in the commercial sophistication on the one hand and the data on the other?
No, the commercial, I get his point, I think. And you see, I mean, is the Buffalo Bills have a new stadium coming up in NFL in the US worth $1.4 billion, where you know that everything is also going to make for your fan that goes into the stadium to spend his money and to, which a football stadium right now in the Premier League, but everywhere else in Europe, you're still behind. That's for sure. I think
the Buffalo Bills are also the team that until a few years ago, you know, they had to play a couple games in Toronto because they just their for financial base. Reasons because their fan base doesn't have that much money. It's not that big. Buffalo's
it might not be the
biggest,
but I can see his point about commercials and merchandising and all of that. Maybe for the data, I think things have changed a long time ago. I mean, Arsenal bought StatDNA maybe 15 years ago or 10 years ago to be a big part of, you know, what they do for their first team, but also in terms of recruitment and database recruitment. So I think this is a bit harsh. I don't know if he knows how every single club in the Premier League works, but certainly he would know from Graham Potter that Brighton work a lot with data.
Oh, I think he's familiar with what Brighton are now after the weekend.
Exactly, after the weekend. And so are Brentford and so are a lot of other clubs. Yeah, of course, you still have old school scouts who are part of your scouting team who still think that going to 300 games a season is better to watch all those players by your own eyes, but you also have a lot of people at those clubs in the Premier League that are heavily data orientated and do a lot of their work with data to sign players. I think this is pretty widely known in the UK, in the Premier League.
Yeah, and it's not just in the Premier League, it's at other clubs.
I'm just looking, 'cause you said those
in
Premier
Europe,
League clubs and all.
You know, the 20 years behind, it's funny because they're different sports, right? If we have Boldy comes from baseball, right? Baseball is, and in fact, there's several books out now, one from our colleague Ryan O'Hanlon, one from Rory Smith, who talk about the history of data and analytics in football. Baseball is very, very easy because you have an enormous data set. They play 162 games.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's a lot of one-on-one battles. It's very easy to count, right?
It's Moneyball, yeah.
But even in the NFL, you know, analytics hasn't made the inroads that it has made in baseball.
That's true.
And in basketball. Football is a more fluid sport. There's a lot of stuff going on. I completely agree with him. I'm not surprised that there are some sporting directors who take that line.
Yeah, for sure.
But there's also many others who don't, and there's many other clubs who have embraced it. On the commercial side, this is where I struggle a little bit, because it brings to mind, what do I want the sport to be like, right? He mentions, oh, Fenway and Man City have done it successfully. Well, the Glazers are hugely profitable every year, obviously without non-pandemic years, right? For the last 10 years, they've not had a particularly good team, right?
No.
And yet they still manage to make a lot of money.
Mm.
There is a rejection, I think, from a lot of fans in Europe about this, what they see as an over-commercialization.
Yeah.
I don't know to what degree this is necessarily what people want. You know, a lot of European clubs have hired executives, have had American owners, or they've had executives from the U.S. running their clubs for a long time. And I think they have a good knowledge of the market and what flies and what doesn't fly over here.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think you win friends and influence people when you come out and say this. I think back to Gary Cook, who obviously wasn't American, was English, but had worked for Nike for a long time. When he came in, Premier League meeting after, you know, City took over, he says, oh, you know, you guys live in the Stone Age, right? And obviously worked out great for Gary Cook since then. But you don't come across very well when you say stuff like this, you know, not just in terms of annoying other people, but do you really know what you're talking about? I mean, I'd argue Paris Saint-Germain, what they've done, and obviously it's taken enormous amounts of money to do it, but it's taken Man City enormous amounts of money to do it as well, right?
Yeah.
On the commercial side, they've built an incredible brand.
Yeah,
I mean, they built a serious brand.
Yeah, yeah.
And they could have said, oh, screw the brand. Let me just buy great players and just, you know, not update the Parc des Princes or whatever, right? So there are interesting things happening elsewhere. Real Madrid, you know, is still, I think, one of the, two, three biggest club brands in sport?
Yeah, all sports combined, yeah.
Are Real Madrid a bigger brand than the Dallas Cowboys? I hate the Cowboys, so I'm going to say yes, they are. Are they bigger than Manchester United? I mean, certainly in the same ballpark,
right?
Yeah,
completely.
Barcelona, despite the messing with the levers, were in that space, right? So, I don't know. I think you're playing a dangerous game when you come in and say, like, oh, let me teach you guys. Hey, look, maybe you'll win. Maybe you'll win this battle, this commercial battle. Maybe you won't. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Chelsea. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid are held at home by Girona 1-1, but Jules, our boy Carletto, isn't happy with a penalty equalizer. Oh, and Toni Kroos gets his first red of his career after 740 games.
Yeah, that's true. First red card in two yellows, by the way, so it doesn't really count as much as a straight red, but still, first time ever for him. They look tired, Real Madrid, and Carletto said it at the end. He said, we played too many games. No Benzema, of course, who still not fully fit, not completely confident in playing. the penalty is just an invention, like Ancelotti said after the game.
You don't think the ball comes off Asensio's chest and onto his arm?
Definitely. I don't think he touches the arm. And clearly they've seen that he touched the arm, but I even didn't think after touching his chest that he should have been given had he touched the arm anyway. But for me, he doesn't touch the arm at any point.
It's weird. You really can't definitively say,
no.
I thought, from the pictures. So then... So why you can't give it,
but there's even the Rodrigo goal that was disallowed. I mean,
I don't have a problem with that. No, the keeper's hand is on the ball, right?
Yeah. I get that. But still, I think for a game that they could have won, maybe should have won, but they were not playing well. And I think the fitness is maybe a bit of a concern.
And I think Ancelotti, I like to give him credit, and you know I love to give him credit, he said, look, it shouldn't have been a penalty. We should have won the game. But we played badly.
Yeah.
We played badly.
Exactly.
You know, simple as.
Yeah. Napoli destroys Sassuolo 4-0 and the stars shine bright with Victor Osimhen getting a hat-trick and Visca Kvaratskhelia scoring two. Gab, you got anything to add to that?
Of course. The best is yet to come. The man is a machine. He's the top. He's missed a month of the season. He's the top goal scorer in Serie A. And by the way, I know we make fun of Serie A, but we do have some pretty good strikers in Serie A, right? Dusan Vlahovic, Rafael Leão, and so on. No, it's Victor Osimhen. I saw
one
crazy
where he lifts his foot. Like,
I know.
He's like Gumby.
How does he do that? This was good. I think if I'm Napoli, I'm sorry. Sorry, Anfield. I send out the C team.
But they will, surely.
What?
They will. No Kvaratskhelia, no Osimhen. They sure. They can't play like
and
that.
And they have so much depth. I want to see Gaetano. I want to see all these dudes
completely.
Play. Sassuolo made defensive errors and Napoli punished them. I don't think they were devastating. By the way, there's a crazy stat that Napoli have scored something like 50 goals in the games in which Osimhen has started this season, and it's not many games. It's something
crazy.
Something mad like that.
Crazy.
Liverpool endure their first home defeat in the league, and Leeds United win 2-1. Jules, Liverpool are ninth, and it's still just two league wins since August.
Yeah, and one really late against Newcastle, remember, in garbage time, and the other one 2 weeks ago against City, where you thought, okay, this is it, they've turned a corner now, they're going to go back to their best. And then it was followed by nothing, really. And every time, even in the Champions League, when you see them a little bit better and Klopp is still searching, we mentioned the diamond midfield and Nunes and Salah up front, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, you go back and you crash down because you make mistakes because of lack of effort. I mean, Leeds ran 11K more as a team than the Liverpool did.
But you know that's what Leeds do.
But
right?
Even with 65% of the ball, if you're Liverpool, this is not good enough anyway.
You just have to accept this is a different Liverpool team to ones who played before.
No,
it has to be in
Liverpool
terms of their approach, and he hasn't found the balance yet.
Yeah. Late winner for Tottenham Hotspur away to Bournemouth as Rodrigo Bentancourt comes off the bench to cap a 3-2 win for Antonio Conte's men after being 2-0 down in the game. Gab, does this mean everything is going to be okay?
Every little thing. No. No.
Definitely
not. I don't think Conte's happy. I think he said what he said after the game because that's how he rules. But, you know, he was hoping. He's like, okay, look, you know, we're playing Bournemouth. Not a big deal. Let me play Skip. Let me give some guys a breather. Perisic was on the bench. Yeah. Bentancur, Lucas Moura, who all of a sudden becomes important because they're not good in the 3-5-2. And again, you know, you see a stinker. Now, were they much better in the second half? Yeah. They took a lot of shots. They scored 3 goals.
Lose of crosses.
But it was also a lot of low percentage shots.
Yeah.
It's not where he wants to be. That said, you can do this. You can play like this. You don't necessarily have to do the thing where you're solid all the time and then you wait for Kane and Son to do something at the other end. I would like to see
you won't always win in the 90th minute, though.
No, that's fine. But if they played the second 45 minutes, they wait for 90 minutes, they would have,
yeah,
I think they would have won the game.
There's a reason why they can't do that. It's not the first time.
But it can't just be physicality. I think it's also the approach.
Yeah.
Conte has to work to. This team needs greater consistency. Arsenal stay top of the league, beating Nottingham Forest 5-0, leapfrogging City, who had won the day before. Jules, this was a perfect response to that City win 24 hours earlier.
Yeah, it was, and to the PSV defeat, and maybe to the Southampton draw as well, because the last two games had been a bit meh for Arsenal, a bit average, let's say. Even if they lost Bukayo Saka through the first half, they were very good. I mean, Forest were poor, really poor, but I think Arsenal made them look so poor. They played well, great positional play, all of that. The efficiency that maybe had been lacking before was there suddenly at the start of the second half when they had, you know, they had chances and they took them with Reece Nelson, the most unlikely like hero of the game. But it's good. It's good for them. Good for the win. Now they can top their group in Europa League on Thursday against Zurich, and then the big game, of course, next weekend against Chelsea on Sunday, which is going to be a much, much bigger and tougher test than the one from Forest.
And another long-range strike from Thomas Partey.
Yeah, what a goal that was.
And another game without scoring for Gabriel Jesus, but we won't go there.
Two assists, Hey, Kevin De Bruyne, masterpiece free kick gives Manchester City the win away to Leicester. Gab, it feels different, though, without Erling Haaland.
Yeah, so the worst thing you can do, I think, right now is to come out and say, oh, City are Haaland-dependent. No, City are not Haaland-dependent.
No.
I thought this game was simply a case of Leicester parking several buses from the Leicester Metropolitan Authority in front of the goal. City maybe being a little bit less sharp. I don't think Julian Alvarez, who started up front, had a great game. And so eventually they needed to beat you with this ridiculous De Bruyne free kick. But they did create other chances.
Yeah.
Although at the end, the last 15, 20 minutes, Brendan Rodgers, you know, sent on Daka and Iheanacho, and he did make things definitely.
You do wonder why he didn't do it earlier. I mean, if you
because you probably didn't want to lose 3-0.
Well, really, losing, you know, I don't know. At least give yourself a chance.
Paris Saint-Germain beat Troyes 4-3 to stay top. The M&M serve up plenty of excitement, but conceding 3 goals at home isn't part of the plan, is it?
No, it could have been more than 3 as well, because to be fair, Troyes played really well on the counter, cut them apart a few times, scored after 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And it was just a game where I think the PSG defense didn't want to defend, the PSG team as a whole.
Sorry, shouldn't somebody like Kimpembe want to defend, given he's wearing the captain's armband and given
his spot
at the World Cup isn't assured?
He was back from injury and maybe he was not sharp enough, fully fit. Sergio Ramos next to him didn't have a good game either in that back four. And Mukiele at right back, who again I don't think is his best position, certainly not in the back four. But then every time they had the ball and going forward, even against a team that defended deep with the 5-4-1 formation, I mean, Messi is just something else. And I know this is only Troyes, no one is getting carried away in France, but you just have to say that pretty much everything he does is perfect. So whether you play against Troyes or Maccabi or Juventus or whoever you want, if you still do everything so perfectly, it's just incredible.
I'm just making a note and then say something nice about Cristiano when we talk about United later, so that we can balance out and not be accused of having an agenda.
But still, well done to Messi. Neymar with an outrageous pass to
Mbappe. PSG.
No, but that pass had to be mentioned on our show.
Oh, and totally unnecessary. This is the thing I think we're talking about. Sorry, I'm going to digress now.
Okay, go on.
When you do stuff like that, the little roulette pass, if it doesn't serve a purpose, people get angry, you're humiliating your opponent. This served a purpose.
Oh, amazing.
This is good. This is prime Neymar. This
and I wish Mbappé had scored so he would stay in the history and the numbers. One assist. Like
instead, it'll be forgotten.
Yeah, exactly. Barcelona get a late winner from Robert Lewandowski to beat Valencia away 1-0 and move within a single point of Real Madrid. Gab, Xavi got the reaction that he wanted, right?
I thought so. Look, I mean, you can read this and say, Reno Gattuso, oh, look, it was tight. And obviously, there were disallowed goals and whatever. But Valencia's XG at the end of the game was 0.1.
Yeah.
I do admit the handball on the disallowed goal was a little bit hokey. I don't know.
I agree.
Then again, if you shove your arm out like that, like you're almost looking for the ball, like you're kind of an idiot. And, you know, you kind of deserve it. There's no reason to do it. Just let the ball run.
That's true.
It's still going to hit him, right? But no, I thought Barcelona played well, actually. I thought Ansu Fati started on the left.
Yeah.
Yes.
Finally.
He missed chances, but he also made those chances himself.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that, you know, they lost both center backs as well in this game, during the game, right? You ended the game again with Marcos Alonso at center back, which I think is suboptimal. So I wouldn't be like, oh, lucky Barcelona. No, no. This was a deserved win.
I'm with you.
Sorry, Reno. Six different goal scorers for Bayern as they destroy Mainz 6-2. Jules, they're on fire.
Yeah.
And even with Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting up front, who scored again?
He scored again, you're right. I mean, he's 6-5 now or 7-6, something like that, crazy. Sadio Mane, Matisse Tell, who came on. Even the subs who came on, so Tell, Kingsley Coman, gave an assist. It was just great. You thought maybe they could be tired after the midweek and playing every 3 days now, like all the other big teams. But no, they seem a bit fresher, to be fair, than others. And certainly the rhythm they have. And Nagelsmann sort of highlighted after the game, Mane and his position on the left, like at Liverpool. And I mean, he was a no-brainer. I know he tried to play more centrally at the beginning, but now to have Troupo there and Mané more in his so familiar best position environment is obviously much better. It's no-brainer.
But can you shoehorn? Okay, so we know Ulreich's going to come in, no problem. Sorry, yeah. He's going to make way for Neuer. Ulreich, by the way, who saved the penalty, it wasn't good.
Yeah, yeah.
But what happens when Müller and Sané need to start?
Yeah, we'll see. But it's working well like this. So, Marcus Rashford scores the 100th goal of his Manchester United career, and Cristiano Ronaldo stars again in the Premier League as they beat West Ham 1-0. Gab, De Gea still had to make two huge saves at the end to keep the 1-0 win for United. Were they a little bit lucky?
No, they weren't a little bit lucky. They were very lucky. This game should have ended in a draw. I thought at the end, West Ham put them under way too much pressure. Yeah. You shouldn't have to rely on David De Gea in that situation. Now, mitigating factors, obviously, no Martial and Elanga and blah, blah, blah. And Harry Maguire starts the game.
No Lindelof, no Van.
But, you know, this is something where you're just happy it's 3 points and happy you don't see West Ham again for a while.
Yeah.
Sticking with United, this was back on Thursday, but I feel like I need to get your thoughts on Antony's spin against Sheriff Tiraspol, because that upset a lot of people.
It did, and I think he
a
upset
lot of ex-pros.
Eric Ten Hag as well, because he benched him for the West Ham game after taking him off at halftime in the Sheriff game. Just don't spin again, please. I mean, I'm all for techers, you know that. I'm all for, even the ones that are not really needed, and I like the spin, but don't do it like this and then put the ball out for
so first of all, like,
it's just,
if you're gonna do it, do something cool. This isn't cool. Like,
just you on your own there, man.
I'm assuming a 12-year-old kid can do it if he practices for half an hour.
Yeah,
right?
It's not.
Secondly, you screw up the pass after. It has to have a purpose.
Yeah.
Again, learn from Big Brother. We mentioned earlier. Learn from Neymar.
Yeah, that's right. Milan lose away to Torino and 4-3 in Serie A. Gab, what went wrong? Pretty much everything?
Just about everything. Just some horrendous defending. Yeah. They did the thing, you know, for both goals. They were 2-0 down. They were lucky because their goal should have never stood.
It was not the strongest push, though.
Well, you just can't. You put your hands all over somebody, shove them to the ground. Come on, man. And the old trick that they did when they, let's send on four different attacking players in the second half. Didn't work either, especially one of them coming on is Charles Ketelaar, who's having a tough time right now.
Yeah.
Look, they're thinking ahead to the Champions League, and rightly so. Jules, Union Berlin continue to troll you.
Aye.
Still against all odds. They're top of the table in the Bundesliga, even though they took a comeback at home to Borussia Mönchengladbach. And what else? A 97th
incredible
minute set-piece winner to get the points to keep them ahead.
Incredible end of the game. They've done this before. They're tired. They look tired. They're clearly on the edge. They have a small squad, and yet they keep winning.
They are destiny's team.
Yeah. Inter make it 4 in a row with a 3-0 win over Sampdoria as Nicolò Barella and Joaquim Correa score some gorgeous goals, Gab. Happy times. And then they're playing Juve. It's the derby in Italia at the weekend.
They're hitting their stride at the right time. In between, they're playing some team from Bavaria. I hope they play the C team, because it doesn't matter, because they're not going to win the group and they're already through. But no, Nicolò Barella is on fire. He's cut out all those stupid bookings which got him in trouble before. Correa showed glimpses of what he does once in a while, not often enough to start. And Lukaku, ready to start.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Newcastle destroy Aston Villa 4-0 and stay in the top four. Jules, Unai Emery doesn't take over until Tuesday. He would not have liked this. And Eddie Howe continues to smile that little smile of his.
Yeah, and they played great. I mean, they were on the front foot straight away. Even if it took them a while to score the first goal, but after that, it was just, they destroyed them. They were too good. I mean, Aston Villa, you win 4-0 against Brentford and you lose 4-0 at Newcastle. It's not looking good. They didn't have much in that game at all. And for Newcastle, well, there will be tougher games, of course. And we saw the one at Old Trafford, for example, and all of that. But right now, you wave that ride big time. You ride that wave big time.
Do you think they somehow mess with Almiron's brain to make him think that he was still at Atlanta United?
I don't know, but I think Jack Grealish, maybe, like all the Jack Grealish, all the trolling from Jack Grealish and everybody else.
I know.
Because he's back to that kind of level, you're right. But to do it No offense to MLS, but to do it in the Premier League.
Slightly higher level.
Crazy stuff from Juve, because Max Allegri starts two teenagers, Miretti and Sule, and a 21-year-old Nicolo Fagioli comes off the bench to score the winner on an assist by another teenager, Ealing Jr., for Juve against Lecce. Are they finally trusting the kids, or this was just a one-off?
I don't know. Maybe he's resting people for the Champions League so that you know they can be sure of not screwing up so they can get in the Europa League.
Yeah,
I never thought I'd seen this, but he's right to play this. Miretti has shown that he's really, really good. He should be starting at Juve. I know this obsession. I mean, I go back to this. I don't want to pick on your boy Angel Di Maria, right? But this guy looks to people as if he's absolutely dogging it because there's a World Cup coming up, right? And you should have known when he says, oh, no, I don't want to sign a two-year deal. I only want a one-year deal. You know, like, because I'm just here to pick up another pay. Like, honestly, like, it's just not a good look. By the way, Nicolo Fagioli, phenomenal goal. Del Piero-esque. Not as good as Del Piero's goal.
No,
but somebody made a really good point about trusting youngsters, right? Fagioli's a guy who come through the youth system at Juve, made his debut a couple years ago. Last season, he was on loan at Cremonese, started the whole season in Serie B. They went up. And this year, Allegri's like, oh, no, there's, remember he gave his famous category seats? There's youngsters, there's superstars, there's megastars, there's decent players, there's squad players, blah, blah, blah. Which is like a way of saying, oh, Fagioli, we need to get these kids out of here. Well, Nicolò Fagioli is the same age, he was born the same day as Kvicha Kvaratskhelia. Kvaratskhelia came from the Dinamo Batumi in the Georgian League. I'm going to assume the Georgian League is not that much better than Serie B. So if you know, but this tells me that if Kvaratskhelia had signed for Juve, we'd never see the guy. We'd see him about as often as we see Fagioli, whose name, by the way, means beans.
Yeah, beans.
Wild ending for Atletico Madrid away to Cádiz as they lose 3-2. Jules, I never thought I'd see Atletico lose a game in these circumstances.
Incredible.
Giving up a counterattack in like the
97 incredible stuff. When you think that as well, that in midweek they obviously lost to they drew with Bayer Leverkusen, but
it
could have
felt like a loss.
Yeah, they missed a penalty and the rebound again to win the game and still have hope to continue in the Champions League. That this time happened against Cádiz in a game that they should have never. And this is not a game that you should lose, really, when you've got, when you Atletico Madrid and you've got aspirations to finish top three, top two, maybe winning the league as well. It shows how not good they are. Low of confidence. Joao Felix came on. Finally, eventually, but still for not a long time.
But did really well. This was good job. Look, I don't have to criticize Joao Felix. I can praise. This was good job, Felix. Right?
Very good job, Felix.
The second goal was great. The first one, the overhead kick, forced the own goal. That's what you want.
It's good,
right?
But I cannot believe we haven't seen more of him in the last few weeks because
he's not been good. His attitude's
crap. I know, but if you don't play him, he can't be good either. You know, this is someone we've said.
If you don't
many
play
times.
Him, you play your boy Griezmann. Griezmann's in
fine. I would play Joao Felix and Griezmann. And Morata, by the way, got injured, which is the. Also, the bad news of
concern
the weekend.
For Spain, too.
Yeah, big worry for them. But incredible end. I mean, I think El Cholo just wanted that week to end, really, and then start over again on Monday. But I'm not sure this week coming would be much better.
You know, we joke about Atleti are like the supervillains who always get the good luck. Talk about bad luck in that game. And also, we didn't mention this, the guy from Cádiz who scored the winner, the ball comes in off his stomach.
Yeah.
Like, if he had a differently shaped six-pack, it would not have gone in.
That's true. Borussia Dortmund win away to Eintracht Frankfurt 2-1. But Gab, how about referee Sascha Stegemann saying after the game that he made a mistake in not giving a penalty when Karim Adeyemi shoved Jesper Lindstrom? It's not the first time we saw in Germany a referee's come on television or on record to say like, this is the mistake I made and I should have done it differently, blah, blah, blah. It's good.
What are you saying? That the referees in Germany are grown-ups?
Yeah, in France as well. By the way, the weekend we had a referee having an interview saying, like, I made a mistake in my last game.
Look, this was a big mistake because Borussia Dortmund played really badly in this game. For once, you know, Borussia Dortmund have been unlucky many times in the past. This time they were super, super lucky. If I was an Eintracht fan, I'd be angry. What was interesting about Stegemann here, I mean, so the incident is, I mean, you can watch it on YouTube, is Adeyemi basically pushing Jesper Lindstrom,
like a,
right?
Yeah, like a proper
He push. Saw it, and in real time to the referee, it seemed like a coming together, as they like to say here. And if you watch on the video, there's guy's got two hands on him, right?
Yeah.
So he said, well, VAR, I guess, didn't, since I'd seen it, VAR decided it wasn't a clear and obvious error. I'm in two minds about this. I don't want VAR to re-referee. But I think one of the things you as VAR should do is you should know your referee well enough and you should know that if Stegemann sees this again, is he going to give the penalty?
Yeah.
If I'm reasonably confident that he will give the penalty and change outcome of this game if he sees it again, you should have him do the on-field review.
I know.
Right? This whole idea that, like, oh, no, VAR only intervenes if it's a clear and obvious error. I know why that's in the rules. But if you know that he's going to do this, I don't know. I appreciate his honesty. But if I'm an Eintracht fan, I'm pretty angry right now.
Yeah.
Kevin Gamero, who's 35 now. How time flies.
Yeah.
Former Paris Saint-Germain legend.
Yeah, yeah.
And Atletico Madrid and Sevilla, many others. Scores an injury time equalizer for Strasbourg against Marseille. Jules, the 2-2 draw means OM have won just once in the league since early September.
Yeah.
Are they getting tired of my shouty buddy Igor Tudor Sedan?
Well, there start to be a lot of tensions, Gab. We saw a fan like sort of abusing Tudor, who was on the pitch post-match doing his flash interview. There's, I think, a bit of unrest within the dressing room.
By the way, Tudor is the kind of guy you want to abuse from a safe distance.
Yeah, although I think that fans was ready. I mean, he almost had a fight with the like security guy at Marseille. But it shows the tension. I think it shows the bad atmosphere. The game on Tuesday against Spurs is huge because you win, you go through to the last 16 of the Champions League, which would be massive for Tudor and for the team. At the Velodrome as well, you don't win and you're out. And I think if you're out of the Champions League after this really bad spell in Ligue 1, it would look really bad for him. And I think it would be more unrest, more tensions, more boos, all of that. So this is a huge game on Tuesday. They had a really good first half. They could have been 3-0 up at halftime. They were 2-0 up at halftime. But it's not enough. In the end, they defend so badly in second halves that they've done it the last 6 weeks or so. It's terrible. It's terrible. Back to Inter, Gab. There were weird scenes at San Siro at halftime when the ultras appeared to forcibly evacuate everyone in the section of the stands. I mean, one of the couple.
Yeah, so this is dead. This is, I think, an opportunity for Inter to do, and I'm going to be fair to Juve, to do what Juve did and put some distance between themselves and the ultras.
Yeah.
So this, what happened here was, this is one, you know, San Siro has three rings. This is one end, and it's a second ring of one end where the ultras, the more passionate fans, sit. One of their leaders happened like an hour before a kickoff. By the way, this guy was 69 years old.
Yeah.
So this guy had been around the block. He's also a bit of an underworld figure. Yeah. He'd spent, I think, more than 15 years in prison at various times for various things, had another trial pending over him. It's not clear what happened. There was a shootout, and he was killed. So the ultras said, oh, we've lost one of our own. Everybody has to be sad. So not only did they not sing, but when they got confirmation that he had passed, which was around halftime, they said, okay, everybody out of this section, everybody out of this section. It's our way of honoring him. And there's people in that section who might be ultras who never knew him or didn't care about him.
Yeah.
There might be people there who just say, I want to buy a seat in that section. No. They forced all these people out. I think, and this was a really bad screw-up from Inter Milan and for the police.
Yeah.
They didn't realize what was going on. So when people say, can I go sit somewhere else away from these maniacs? They're like, no, your ticket's for that section. Sorry, if you leave the section, you're leaving the stadium, you're going home. It's terrible PR.
Yeah.
Like what the ultras do
it's
is important.
Crazy stuff.
You don't need to behave like this. You don't need to start. The minute you start, your actions negatively affect other fans of your own team, you need to ask yourself, I'm doing something wrong here.
Yeah.
There's so many other ways they can honor this guy's death. And by the way, we can have a debate about whether this is somebody whose death ought to be honored.
Yeah.
Bayer Leverkusen lose away to Leipzig 2-0. Jules, both clubs change managers this season. The difference is Marco Rose is undefeated in 9 and has beaten Real Madrid. Whereas Xabi Alonso, after winning on his debut against Schalke 4-0, but hey, Schalke, right?
Yeah, Schalke.
Has taken just 2 points from his last 5 and is in the bottom 3.
Yeah, I thought it was worrying, the difference between the two teams. And I guess you talk about Marco Rose being undefeated. It's not the same experience either between Rose and Xabi Alonso, who've been saying might become a great manager and certainly has a great mind and worked under great managers. But this is all new to him. He's only been in charge for like 7 games or something in all competition, or 8 games. I just thought Leipzig were too good. And Kunku, I love what Rose has done with Szoboszlai, who's back to his best. And for Xabi Alonso, I think it's worrying because I don't see any You can lose, but play better or progress, or you see a progression or you see something. We keep watching them in the Champions League, in the league, and there's just nothing yet. They escaped Atletico Madrid, and now they've got, you know, obviously a big game coming up in midweek to stay in Europe. But I'm just like...
It's really difficult, I think, for an inexperienced manager to take over without preseason, to take over a team that...
Especially when you've never managed. Apart from Real Sociedad beat him. Yeah, but it doesn't count.
It's a completely different experience. It's a completely different experience. And, yeah, and look, to be fair to Leverkusen, they thought, okay, we said goodbye to Rico Suave. So, you know, how bad can it be? Xabi Alonso will be mid-table, rebuilding, and then next season we go again.
Yeah, I think that's the
idea.
But
now they're stuck. There's only two teams below them in the table.
Yeah. Atalanta win away to Empoli 2-0 and move into second place. Gab, they're not going away, that's for sure. And Osimhen isn't the only Nigerian shining right now in Serie A. What about Ademola Lookman?
He's been fantastic. He scored a great goal.
Yeah, again.
Gives them something very different in terms of drive, in terms of quickness. Atalanta, I think, quite fortunate with the other goal, which was rather dubious penalty. But no, he's given them another dimension. Like we said, they're playing different. They still have a lot of injured guys to come back. And they're putting all these points away. When the injured guys come back, these guys could hang around in the top four, much as it would annoy some people.
Yeah.
But Gasperini's still around.
And next week is Atalanta and Napoli. Woo!
How about that? Your boy, Alexandre Lacazette, scores the only goal as Laurent Blanc's Lyon beat Paulo Fonseca's Lille.
Yeah, 1-0. I'm very happy for Lacazette and for Larry White, of course. It's not deserved. Lille played so well. They were the better team for most of that game. Lyon basically had one chance in that second half, 15 minutes from time, that Tagliafico's cross, Lacazette sort of tap in. But before that, Lille and Jonathan David was so, so good. And Fonseca was right at the end. He said, this is really frustrating.
His little chip when he hit the crossbar.
My God. And they were lucky. And Lopez had a really good game in goal for Lyon. But Fonseca said after the game, this is so frustrating for us. But if we keep playing like this, we're going to score many more goals and we're going to win many more matches. And he's right. Sometimes you just leave aside the score and look at the performance. And it was really good from Lille. They were just a bit unfortunate on the day. And for Lyon, it's a good win, but it's not a win that solves much. Blanc had to change at halftime, the whole formation, the whole system. But you get 3 points, and again, you move on quickly. Brentford and Wolves draw 1-1. But Gab, let's talk about Diego Costa and his headbutt on Ben Mee at the very end and the red card.
Before we do that, can we talk about Ben Mee's goal?
Oh, wow.
He's the most improbable guy. Like, you would have never believed me that Ben Mee could do that.
No,
right?
Definitely not.
You realize just how good even kind of like the rough and tumble, hard British center backs are.
Like incredible.
They can pull this off, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I don't know if James Tarkowski can do this, but we found out. Maybe he can.
Maybe Ben Mee
can do this.
Maybe.
So this is at the end. This is so Diego Costa, right? Because they're kind of like wrapped up. Because this is just after Wolves had equalized to Ruben Neves. They're kind of ramped up at the edge of the box, and it's almost like Diego Costa forgets. By the way, this is a very slim Diego Costa relative to the one he
looks
from before, right?
I mean, he still doesn't score, but
it looks like he's got him like around his neck, and he uses his neck to like smash his head into it.
Which is scary.
It is scary. Also, Ben Mee goes down and stays down and doesn't move. That was pretty scary, too.
Yeah.
Diego, there's VAR. You're not going to get away with it. It's a wrong thing to do.
I
hope, actually, he gets more than 3 games because he definitely deserves more than three games or something like that.
That was a bad one.
Jules, we don't often talk about the lower leagues, but I feel like we have to, given the wild finish in League One when Charlton Athletic hosted Ipswich Town.
Yeah, incredible, Gab. I mean, to be fair, I didn't watch the game. That one
funny
I saw
that,
after.
Yeah.
No, but it's 2-2 on the 90th minute. You think, okay, this is a draw. It's been a good game already. And you think, okay, this would be it. But no, because in the 91st minute, Ladapo scored for Ipswich away at Charlton. So you think, wow, great win away. Ipswich, you know, they're going to go and get the 3 points. And then, 3 minutes later, 94th, they score the fourth goal. So they're 4-2 up now in the 94th minute. Morsi with their fourth goal. You say, okay, 4-2 up in the 94th minute. This is it. The game is over. Well, it wasn't, because Thomas in the 96th minute scored for Charlton, and then the start explodes and you think, maybe the unthinkable is possible now. And then George Dobson in the 99th minute scored the equalizer to finish 4-4. We had 4 goals between the 93rd and 99th minute. Incredible scenes at the Valley. It was just one of those games, you know, that people who were there We'll never ever forget.
Imagine the guys who like walked out at minute 90 at 2-2 to beat the traffic. You know,
to beat the traffic. Get it. Back to Arsenal, Gav. There was a tribute to Pablo Mari, currently on loan at Monza, after he was stabbed in a horrific attack in a supermarket near Milan on Saturday.
Yeah, this is absolutely terrible. Pablo Mari is recovering in the hospital. That's the most important thing.
It
was a supermarket. It was a Carrefour, actually, at a shopping center that I've been to in Milano Fiori, on sort of the suburb of Milan. It was a man who's mentally disturbed, who goes into the Carrefour, goes to the knife section where they sell kitchen knives, takes a kitchen knife, and just starts stabbing people. I think he stabbed five different individuals, including Pablo Mari, who was there with his kid. He stabbed him in the back. And apparently, one of the things that, according to the police report, was the fact that Pablo Mari is a professional athlete and has a muscular back prevented the blade from going even deeper. He ended up stabbing and he killed, I think it's a security guard or a cashier who later died from his wounds. He was apprehended with the help of, really, people are going to think that it's only footballers and ex-footballers in supermarkets in Italy. But yeah, with a guy named Tarantino, who's a former defender for Napoli and Inter, who lives in Milan. He helped subdue him. It's just terrible. And, you know, whatever your views on this, you know, it's a kitchen knife.
I know.
You realize that people who are disturbed need help. This guy apparently, he'd been in and out of treatment for different things, wasn't given his medication. Pablo Mari was in the wrong place at the wrong time, but it looks like he's going to make, early on, he's going to make a full recovery. Yeah. And it was really nice to see that tribute from the Arsenal players holding up Pablo Mari's shirt. Jules, you follow MLS more than I do. We now have our finalists.
Yes.
LAFC beating Austin 3-0. And the Philadelphia Union, coming from behind to knock off New York City FC. Yeah.
I mean, first LAFC after, you know, only being in the league, this is the fifth season, to reach the final. Carlos Vela, of course. No Gareth Bale, who was injured, but Giorgio Chiellini.
Was Gareth Bale injured?
Chiellini was there. And my boy Denis Buonga, of course, the former Saint-Etienne legend, who's having a hell of a time in MLS. Well done to them. And then, I mean, what's going on with sports in Philly? I mean, not so much basketball, but obviously the Eagles 7-0, as you keep reminding me. The Phillies in baseball are in the World Series.
1-1. We played the Astros again,
too. The Astros.
The cheating Astros.
And now you will have the Union, who we wore T-shirt and shirts earlier this season. So I think we brought you luck. We brought you a lot of luck, Union and Union fans, in the final as well against LAFC. So that's great. I hope the Sixers can do something in the NBA this season, although it doesn't really look that way.
Not a big James Harden guy myself. But how about also the man Blake, the keeper for Jamaican. If Alexis Nunez were here, she would say, only Jesus saved more.
Exactly. L'Equipe are reporting, Gab, that Paris Saint-Germain will report losses of €350 million in the 21-22 season. That's a world record, of course. And how are they going to satisfy the financial fair play requirements?
I have no idea how you can possibly do this. I mean, I think they're going to argue that this big sponsorship deal we have with Qatar is legit and it's fair market value, and UEFA is going to say no, and they're going to argue.
Back to where we were before.
There's a credibility. This is the last year of the current version of financial fair play rules. From next season, they're called financial sustainability thing. There's going to be different wrinkles to it. In the end, though, it's all going to come down to primarily revenue. And if you get revenue from sponsorships that are related to you, and this isn't just Paris Saint-Germain, it also applies, of course, to Manchester City, you have to argue that the amount you're getting is fair market value. And if UEFA can prove that it's not, I think there has to be some credibility going on. Otherwise, we're still going to be at the same place where we're going to have one side saying, you know, you guys are all cheating. And the other side like, no, you're all afraid of us because we're new money and you're racist and whatever. And we're not going to get anywhere. I don't know how you thread the needle on this one. I really don't.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the Mbappe contract. I think
this is not included in this.
21-22, which is not the Mbappe
contract.
This is
the old Mbappe contract.
Yeah, I don't know. I think strategy is to come clean, and I think every 6 months they meet with UEFA people and say, like, look, this is where we are, this is what we're doing, we're trying to do
the same thing. We still have this, you know, And it's so big now. Like, you know, they have the deal with Accor Hotels, right?
Which is a
French hotel chain that you might know, Sofitel, Novotel. I like staying in Novotel because they used to give you little stuffed animals, which my kids loved when they were little. But who owns a big chunk of Accor? Qatar. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, you're kind of back at the same starting point.
I know. They are indeed.
The Athletic, David Ornstein, reporting today that talks are intensifying between Inter Miami and Lionel Messi. Obviously, Jorge Mas there, big fan of Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
Big fan of Argentines in general. Of course, he had Higuain, too. They're looking at the possibility of Messi jumping ship when his contract expires with Paris Saint-Germain in June join Inter Miami.
Yeah, which we knew. Again, there was nothing we learned from that because we knew that Inter were very keen and they're going to push and going to try, like Barcelona are going to try. And like PSG are still hoping to keep him for maybe another year after this one, maybe even two, seeing how happy he is currently and how well he's playing. I don't think there's any talks right now happening between the Messi family and any clubs because Messi has said, I don't want any talks before the World Cup anyway.
There's no reason to talk.
There's no reason why. He's got plenty of time, come the new year, to then see what his best options are. We know that Inter Miami are a possibility, especially if they sign Sergio Busquets, one of Messi's closest friends, or maybe even Luis Suarez. We know that he's got a place in Miami that he bought a long time ago, that he likes the place, of course, and that MLS, he said it before, would be a league that he would want to play in one day. But PSG right now are telling us that they're also quite optimistic. The feeling that they have with him that he might want to stay another year and try again to win the Champions League, for example. So
if he keeps playing at this level, he can definitely do it.
Of course. Of course. So we'll have to see. And talking about Luis Suarez and Messi's friend, Suarez won another title, Gab, in his career, and this time with Nacional, who became the Uruguayan champions.
For the 49th time, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't know how many Peñarol has won. I feels like
the other 50, maybe.
Like, I know football's been around for a long time in Argentina. It doesn't feel like anybody else ever wins. But no, look, he went there. I think he's psyched that he went there. He wanted to be fit for the World Cup. He got to win another trophy.
Yeah.
Well done, Nacional. Shout out to Flamengo and Gabriel Barbosa, a.k.a. Gabigol, former Interstar, who won the Copa Libertadores, beating Atlético Paranaense in the final 1-0. Jules, how happy are you for our old friends, and I do mean old friends with a combined age of 72, David Luiz and Felipe Luiz?
Really happy, really happy. It's a great win. It's their second Libertadores in the last 4 years, by the way. Show how dominant they've been, how good they've been. This kind of policy of bringing back from Europe, you know, Brazilian players or South American stars, really, is paying off. They've got money, they've got that kind of talent.
And they have Jorge de Arrascaeta. I thought he'd be your kind of player.
Of course. So it's working well for them. Well done. And again, the Brazilian dominance with two Brazilian clubs in the final again.
And by the way, the other one, Le Paranense, coached by Filipao Scolari, by the way. That's a bucket of laughs.
NOS, the Dutch national broadcaster, is reporting that Qatar will pay to fly 50 Dutch fans to travel to the World Cup and put them in hotels, Gab. In exchange, they expected those fans to make positive posts on social media. You okay with this? So basically, all the influencers in Holland, you bring them over and they can tell their community how great Qatar is.
Okay, so first of all, I'm very glad that you specified that in this case, NOS refers to the Dutch national broadcaster and not the super fuel they used in Fast and Furious.
Yeah,
and
that would have been
maybe weird. They all got high off the fumes of that. No, it's funny. So I don't have a problem with, in fact, years ago, I ran into somebody after they were awarded the World Cup. I said, you know, I was talking to somebody who was involved with it, and he's like, oh, you know, we might do this. We might, you know, 550 super fans, especially from some of the poor countries, because we know it's expensive once you get here. It's difficult to get here. Okay, Holland is obviously not one of the poor countries. It's a bit cheesy. I think if these guys really are influencers and they're Dutch, I don't know how much you've been around Dutch people. They tend to do what they want, right?
Yeah.
They do like saving money, but, you know, if you fly 50 people over and say, hey, look, experience the World Cup, and just tell us what you see. Tell us what you think.
But
right?
Do you think they're going to do that with other countries? Right? Because why just the Netherlands?
Well, this is the thing. If you do it with other countries, I think it makes sense, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not going to cost you that much money in the broader scheme of how many billions have been spent on this World Cup.
Sure.
I don't know if they'll get them tickets. I think my understanding is they still have to apply for tickets on their own. But that's not such a big deal because the cheapest tickets, I think, relatively, I think they're about $70, 70 yeah. euros or something like that. If you present it like this, oh, look, we'll send you, you know, we'll fly you over for a month, but you only have to say nice things about them. I mean, what are they going to do? How are they going to judge? I don't have so much of an issue as some people do with this. Jules, this brings us to an end.
Oh, yeah.
But we got to come back on Thursday because it is match day 6 of the Champions. Do, 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 do. Some big verdicts coming up. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.